95.7 The Wolf, the station of the Rock and Blues Nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Vagrant Creative Studios and 95.7 The Wolf. We're so happy to see such a great crowd out here today for our Harvest Stew series session with JJ Gray. And we're honored to have him in today. And we had such a great week. We had Keith Haldon on Monday. We had Eden Brent from Mississippi in on Tuesday. Yesterday, we had our good friend Ross Nielsen in. Today, of course, sitting up in front of you is JJ Gray. You might recognize this guy here beside him as well. Tomorrow, we have Matt Anderson in, which is also a sold-out crowd. And we have on Saturday an amazing group called Green Sky Bluegrass, and they're in at 12:30. And make sure you catch them out. They are awesome. We have a special guest interviewer in today. If you happened to be here yesterday, then you caught Ross in for his Harvest Studio Series session, and it was awesome as usual. Ross is going to have a little chat with JJ and talk about some music, some stuff, whatever they're up to. It's just a chat. I mean, it's a conversation. That's really what it is. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce JJ Gray, straight in from Florida, and our good friend Ross Nielsen, Fredericton's favorite son, of course. And I would like to mention actually their shows just before I hand it over. JJ Gray and Mofro is playing tonight at the Mojo Tent. They have Tony Lynn Washington and the record company opening up each at 7 and 8:30 respectively, and JJ starts at 10 p.m. Make sure that you catch it. It will be awesome. I'm going to give a little plug for Ross's shows here too. Ross plays Friday. He's opening for Matt Minglewood, and Ross's show starts at 7 p.m. Thank you, Ross. And of course, on Saturday in the Hoodoo House, Ross's Blues by Invitation starts at 7:30 p.m., and Ross hits the stage at 10:30. Without further ado, I'd like to hand it over to our good friend Ross Nielsen with JJ Gray.
Thanks, Carter. How you feeling today, JJ?
I'm feeling good.
Good, man. Glad you're here.
Me too. Thanks.
Well, let's get right to it. The new album, Old Glory, your seventh album, is that right?
That's right.
And we were talking a little bit before we went live here, just kind of about stuff, and you've recorded all your albums in the same studio.
Mm-hmm. Retrophonics.
Yeah, and that's down in Florida?
Yeah, in Crescent Beach. It's just below St. Augustine.
So, I don't know, in my mind, it seems rare that an artist would hole up in the same studio for their whole career. I think a lot of artists ping-pong around to different places, maybe associated with different producers, but you've done all of them with the same guy in the same place. Is it just because it's like home for you, or that's where you're comfy?
Yeah, and I feel like what I want to do, it gets closer every time,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not opposed to working with other people, but I love what Dan does, and Dan knows the studio, and obviously Jim knows the studio. He owns it, Jim DeVito, and you know, for me, it's a welcome break to go lay on the beach for a month, you know, and just record for a couple of weeks, but just lay on the beach. And in fact, it's hard to get me in the studio, actually, when I'm down there. So.
Sounds taxing.
Whew. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever gone surfing and recording the same day.
That's
for sure. A little chilly around here. I read somewhere that you did a lot of the demo or a lot of the vocals at your home studio for this album. Is that...
Yeah. I actually did all of them. That wasn't... that was just because I still wasn't comfortable with the songs, you know. A song happens, you know, I say I write a song happens for me, it just kind of happens, and then I do as much as I can to commit it to memory, and then I figure out how I want to arrange it, and then I get the band to play that, and then I seldom do it again until I sing the song or play the song until we hit the studio. And this record, I wanted to spend more time, so we were in Europe, and we got the opportunity at sound checks, and we would play the songs. But they didn't really have that lived-in feel from the singing side of things for me, like it does a year later. A year after a record comes out, I'm like, oh, I wish I could re-record it now, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to have that same feeling, so I spent the whole summer singing and failing and succeeding and failing and, you know, just kept messing around till, you know, by myself where there's no clock, no red light
right.
to worry about.
No money flying out the
window. Just keep on till I get it right. And thankfully, Jim and Dan has helped me put together a studio at home that I can do something like that in. I can't record a whole band, but I kind of can. Some of the stuff has got band tracks on it. But.
So you said you commit those to memory as best possible. Do you not demo, like try and capture a demo of the tune as you write it? Or
I do... No, usually I do stuff really bare bones on a pocket recorder or something, and then I go home. And in that studio I do have drums, but everything set up where I can just jump from instrument to instrument and just play a really bad version of it, and but figure out what kind of lays together where, and then you know, call in the big guns to do a real version of it.
Do you have any fear or any instance where you, like, I know some artists typically don't, they demo like that in a real rough manner, because when a song is born, oftentimes that inspiration and the creativity that's happening there is so genuine and so powerful. If you nail that down and then later you go back to a studio and you're like, how'd that demo go? And you listen to the demo and it's like, I'm never going to beat that.
Yeah.
Is that ever a concern?
Demo-itis.
Demo-itis.
Yeah. it has happened many times, but... like Old Glory, the title track itself, that is the demo vocal. That's the everything at once. That's, you know, I put down a loop, a drum loop. I played a drum pass and I put down like 8/16 bars, and then I looped that, and then I did a bass, and then I quickly put down the piano, the don't part and all that, and then I just grabbed them. I looped it out in infinity, so to speak, and I just grabbed a microphone and sang everything. And then, so in the end, I just took the demo to the studio. We piped it through the drummer and the bass player's ears, and then they just replayed the drums and the bass right to my original vocal.
And did you improv those vocals?
Yeah.
Those lyrics are on
everything
the spot, made
from
up.
From start to finish. Just, the only thing is
that's mind-blowing.
The album version is cut, edited a little bit, because it was a lot longer. There was a lot more singing, a lot more words, and cut it down.
It's good
a
to have
bit.
Too much.
It's hard
to make something longer when it's too short.
I just got caught up in it, and just, you know, before I knew it, I'd done.
For our audience
minutes.
Who's in studio right now and in Radioland, if you haven't heard the title track to Old Glory, and really there's no excuse for you not to have, you better go and get it and hear what I'm talking about. To have that kind of creation moment where lyrics are spontaneously coming out of you and you keep them is probably pretty rare. Have you done that before, where the lyrics came on the spot and you kept those lyrics and that take?
No. I've done it before where the lyrics came out, like for This River, The Sun Is Shining Down, Brighter Days. Funnily enough, the songs that the fans seem to love the most are all, and Lock Lusa, are all songs that happened instantly. Everything happened at once, and that was it.
So, way down my many question list here is a really kind of annoying question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Do you know where your songs come from?
No. I guess, you know, I don't know. I've got my own theories of how the world works, but and I'm sure they're just as wrong as anybody else's. you know, I don't know, it just feels like the information, all knowledge is everywhere all the time. And then when it comes, it just comes, man. And you just, we're all kind of antennas. Sometimes we turn ourselves off, and I'm as guilty as anybody of that. And then sometimes, you know, that you can't really turn yourself on. You just, I don't know, you just quit trying and things happen, you know.
So
it's playing basketball or surfing or anything, you quit trying and good things happen. You know, you don't try, you just do.
Yeah.
You don't, you
kind
just
in
be
that moment in that zone.
Exactly.
The conduit, I guess.
That's it. And everything that for a show, for me, for a song is tied to now, right now.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
I think I read a Neil Young bio a long time ago. I think it was called Shaky. And he talked a lot in it about his producer constantly trying to encourage them to get closer, what they called, quote-unquote, closer to the source. And for me, sometimes I see performers who seem like the second they're on stage, they're in that zone. It's effortless. They're the conduit. They're just there. And it's like a waterfall coming over them of this great energy. And oftentimes I find your shows to be like that, where it's such a love in, it's good vibes and stuff. And as a kind of a performer who really commands a crowd, I've seen you over the years, and you've really become such a strong presence on stage. Is that something you learn from stage time? Is it something you have consciously worked at? Have you seen people do things on stage where you're like, I gotta try that at my next show? Is it a combination of all these things?
Probably. Being inspired by other people definitely helps. When I started out, I was, when I was young, real young, I was a crazy front man dude, dressed crazy, did crazy stuff, and anything to get people's attention the old-fashioned way. And then when time came and I started playing guitar, Dan Proffler, the producer, kept pushing me to play during the show. He's like, you got to play. I'm like, well, I can't really play and sing. I've never done it. So I had to go out and do that and then try to limp my way through that. And now I feel like I've come full circle in the sense that it's like I had to break down and lose everything. Eventually, I was on the road for so long, and I had pneumonia for over a year and a half playing. I didn't realize that I was singing for forever with it, and just killing myself. And I lost it. And then after I lost it, I realized I didn't lose anything. I finally found it, and I really realized that why I go on stage and why I do this is has nothing to do with music. And it has nothing to do with impressing people or anything else, because I fail miserably at that many times too. It has to do with sharing an honest moment.
Mm-hmm. Vulnerability.
And then when that happens, everything plays itself. Everything does itself. I don't have to do anything. And I want a show to feel like a family reunion where instruments broke out, and not a family reunion with drama, actually. a friend's reunion instead of a family reunion's got too much baggage. A friend's reunion where everybody, there's happened to be some musical instruments and let's just roll, and for me it's trusting in that and trusting in the moment that things will just, it'll just do what it's going to do,
I've seen the word fearless used a lot to describe your performances, and for me, it looks to me, I think a lot about, you talk about failing, pleasing people and stuff. I think a lot about relationships, because I've failed at all of them, but I've learned a lot in those failures, and one thing I've learned more recently, and I think about it a lot, and it doesn't just apply to cohabitation relationships, I think it applies to performance and that kind of stuff, is the vulnerability and connectivity. Connectivity is what people crave, whether they know it or not. That's what we all need to live happily. And I think vulnerability allows that connectivity. And when you're vulnerable, when you get hurt or you get put off, you put that wall up to keep yourself protected, but it also keeps everything out. And it stops that connectivity. So when you're vulnerable, that connectivity is happening. And is that kind of what happened when you found that when you said you thought you lost it but found it, is being able to be vulnerable all the time?
Yeah, I think that, another word you could use too for the vulnerable, and I agree 100%, is or you just give up. Mm-hmm. You just give up.
Just be.
You just give up and quit. And quit trying to force what's happening into this tiny, minuscule box, this infinite infinity that's going on all the time around you, and to try to force it into a box and say this is what it is. And when you can let go of that, it's a scary proposition. So they say I'm fearless, but that's not how I feel all the time, man. Yeah. I could be on stage in front of 10,000 people, and if I see one person leaving, it could make me start thinking, what's going on? We're not playing hard enough. We're not playing loud enough. So I just I've heard somebody say that there's just two things. There's love and there's fear. Mm-hmm. And there's really only one. There's just love. And fear is just this thing you make up in your mind. Right. And the other thing is real. And that's what's going on around us all the time. So I just jump in with both feet. If something like that happens, I just feel my hand on the microphone or the strings of a guitar, what's going on at that moment, I get lost in everything else. I try to hear all the things that's going on at once, people in the audience, the band, everything, and see it all at once. Mm-hmm. You know, just open my vision up till I don't see anything, I see everything. And then when I do that, I get lost in it. And then I wake up and the show's done.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I can't speak for everybody who goes to a show, but for me, when I go to a show and I get that feeling, that's as an audience member, that's how I feel too. It's not, you know, I'm a guitar nerd, so I start out looking at the guitar. But then in a band like yours, I can't help it. I even look at the bass player. Like, the bass player's amazing. I'm just kidding. Smalley's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's great.
you take it, try it, like you said, take it all in and kind of let it wash over you and be that kind of connected spot, you know. Yeah. On that note, do you feel up to playing a tune?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Okay, I'm going to get out of your space.
Never behind you, run away. But you got to turn and fight, live another day. Whisper in the sawgrass, murmur in the pine. Lift your hands up and away, lift them off your eyes. Oh yeah, playing hide and seek. Put my eyes wide open. Playing hide and seek, put my eyes wide open. Oh yeah, a voice says you're right, another says you're wrong. Well, who speaks and who listens? The weak or the strong? Can you feel the fear deep within your mind? 'Cause there's no loss or gain in soul. Nothing real can ever die or feel it. Playing hide and seek. My eyes are wide open. Playing hide and seek. My eyes are wide open. Disintegrate. Oh, liberate. Lord, I can't think myself free.
Forgot to bring my harmonica. I don't want to play it right here. Woo.
DJ. Ooh. I can hear him say that the truth then must be lived to wake up from the dream of madness, baby. My eyes are wide open.
Thank y'all. Thank you.
All right, we're back here. 95.7 FM, The Wolf. I've been dying to say that the whole time. It's my interview debut here. Poor JJ. No one told him that he was going to be interviewed by another musician. I guess before, that was an amazing song, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you.
For playing. And I guess before we took that little break, we were talking about songwriting and where songs come from and that kind of stuff. And I wonder what your thought is on how important it is to divulge too much information about a song. Obviously, even as a music fan, you know, you hear a tune and you become connected to that song. That's your song. Oh my God, he's playing my song. And you think, oh, that's about, I know what that's about, man. And then you go see an artist live and they actually lay it on the line what the song's about. And it's like, oh, that's not about me at all. Or it's not even about the thing I thought it was about, you know? Is it, do you think it's important to leave a little hole there for people to make their own judgment on it, make it
yeah,
their own thing?
Yeah, I think once the song goes out there, it belongs to each individual, you know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and, some and it's bad enough if an artist tells you exactly what it's about to the letter and you're like, oh my gosh, that's nowhere near what I thought. But it's even worse if you misinterpret the lyrics completely, you know, like Men at Work doing It's a Mistake and I thought it was It's Summer's Day and I'm thinking, this is summer song, yeah man, and you got this
party
vision
time.
And I found out, no, it's a mistake, not It's Summer's Day, it's yeah. Summer's Day. I was like, oh gosh. So and that's all on me, you know. I like yeah. I don't want to mess too much with each person's idea of what a song's about, unless the song's kind of really super specific, you know. Then yeah. I might give somebody a little background on it, but
leave a hole in the story somewhere.
For yeah, yeah,
to
yeah. I
still
learned,
feel connected to it,
and I learned that with writing a song. Kind of, I the song there's a song called actually it's the bonus track on this and it's on Blackwater Santa Claus True Love and Freedom. Mm-hmm. The original version was way too long, too many. I just told every aspect of the story, you know, to the point where it's like after school special, what I'd call after school specials, like come on man, you know, lighten up, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt. You don't have to tell them the tide was high and the moon was full and it was 6:55 p.m. and this, you know, just let people find their way through the story themselves and interpret their own way and right. So it can work both ways, in the song itself or talking about the song.
Yeah, I'm fascinated lately with I'm always fascinated about lyrics and always want to learn how to figure out how to be better at writing lyrics. And so lately I listen to or read actually people like yourself and artists like Jason Isbell, who are a great songwriter, and I'm fascinated by the words they leave out but still manage to tell a story in line with just a couple of words here and there. And that's a real art form, and I find a lot of your tunes you convey an image or a storyline without going into that after school special detail, you know?
Most of those tunes you're talking about just write themselves. Yeah. Anytime I've gotten clever, mm-hmm. it's always been, yeah. yeah.
Or sit down.
Just
like,
one of them things.
Do you find like just some of your writing come, as you say, they write themselves, and other ones you have to sit down and work at?
I've done that, and it's been okay. I tend to notice over a period of time that the songs that I really worked on and really done, blah, 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 they're songs that don't make it over the long haul for me live and with the audiences. They just don't. I just don't. And I don't do songs off, like, audience response. I do songs off what I feel like moves me. If it moves me, then it'll, you know, hopefully move everybody, because yeah. then I'm, you know, people feel like it's genuine.
Yeah.
And in some songs, it just feels like, oh man, I was just trying too hard that day. Usually, though, a lot of that stuff, fortunately, gets axed before it gets on the record. You know, I'm like, nah, right. I'm just not feeling it. So, but there's been one or two that slipped through that I'm like, I'd like another crack at that, you know, and just, like play the chords and just have the lyric idea that I had and let it happen again rather yeah. than trying to be really, really poetically clever, because right. it's not been a good thing for me.
Do you sometimes let stuff lie and then come back to it and see if there's some
oh, yeah.
fresh inspiration?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
instead
definitely.
Of pounding it out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
I want to talk a little bit about a concept that kind of floats around my brain a lot about reality. If I may get this bizarre at this time of day.
Bring it.
But for me, and what I kind of, when I look around the world and things that I've noticed, there seems to be like a, in my experience of playing, well, just living, it doesn't have to be about playing. I think it's probably something that anyone can relate to. But specifically playing music and living in a community and stuff, the perceived and actual reality of what really happens in a life. For example, you see a restaurant you go to in your neighborhood a couple times a week and it's always busy and you think, man, these guys are banging the money out, they're getting rich, making $1 million this year. But people don't realize that the actual reality, of course that would be the perceived reality, the actual reality is that their expenses are extravagant and, you know, the guy's making $20,000 like everybody else. So throughout I mean, your career has been lengthy. You were not an overnight sensation.
Right.
You've been working your butt off for a long time. So, is that something you can relate to? People coming up to you and thinking you're doing so well. At some point in your career, was that like, man, if they knew, it would like shatter their minds.
Yeah, and it's best not to to go into that. You know, it's like let people, you know.
Is it still like that? Has the perceived and actual balanced out?
Well,
somewhat?
I'll give you a classic example. It's not so much money on the money side of it, but it is in the same sort of world, and that is a tour bus. It's a big deal to people sometimes, and especially younger bands. And it's like, it's just. It's a tour bus.
It's a money pit.
But once you pile 12 people in it for 4 days, it's just a giant dirty RV. There's nothing fun or glamorous about it. And it's the same way, you know, it's with anything, a business. It's like the people that own a business know, you know, like it's fun to talk about what people gross, like a business gross $1.3 million. Well, it costs $1.25 million to make it happen that year, you know, and it's like, it's, you know, and that's just the way everything works, because there really, in my opinion, there's no such thing as reality. There's only perception, and everybody's got one that's different from every other human being around them. And so what you perceive and what's real, they're vastly different.
Yeah.
And always vastly different.
Often the case. And I guess in that aspect, on the same topic, if we weren't talking about money per se, you know, we talked a little bit about this off air, but at shows, you know, when you feel, maybe you come off the stage feeling like it wasn't the best night for you. For me, that happens. It probably doesn't happen for you and your band, but
it does.
but people still come up to you, and maybe it's the first time they saw you, or maybe it's the third or fourth or 300th time they saw you, and it's like, JJ, that was the best show, man. That hit me so hard. And in your mind, you're thinking, what show were you at tonight? But how do you just, not to burst their bubble, let them have that moment?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You don't want to take that away.
The point is they may be closer to the truth than you.
Right.
And I'm thinking, last night, you know, it's two nights off. It's always just tough on me, man. I don't like to take time off. You know, I don't want to take 2 days off. I want to keep singing, keep it warm and keep it moving. And so last night, you know, my voice broke up a couple of times. And, you know, I could be sitting there thinking about it, the same thing. Oh, man, it sounded great. I'm like, well, she didn't hear those two. And they're like, well, he might have went to the beer tent, you know, when that happened.
Yeah.
But the whole point is that other people don't notice all the little crazy, because we've got booby traps, you know, doing what you do, singing on stage, same as me, and we booby trap ourselves. The audience doesn't have any of those booby traps. They just came to hear. They don't, thankfully. I mean, there might be one or two, you know, guitar, vocal, singing, music nerds that are like, oh my gosh, you didn't do it like we were talking about, like you did it on the record. But for the most part, most people come to just, like I said, to get to share an honest moment. And sometimes a mistake, you know, I've blown it. Sometimes my voice is like, whoo, that was bad. And just laughed at myself and then realized the audience laughed too. Like, yeah, it's funny, man.
Yeah, in the moment.
You clam. That was a major clam. And like, cool, you know.
I think maybe part of the luxury of being so honest on stage all the time is that you've built a loyal following of people who just love your music. And I think in that situation, they see that it's real and that you're up there doing it anyway and pushing through it, and they probably enjoy that more than would ever think about, oh, man, JJ didn't hit that note or something like that.
So. Well, thankfully, most of the people I feel like that come to our shows, they're not in an analytical mood. They don't have their calculators out and then working on, oh, my gosh, they're like, I just,
Yeah,
relax and
have a beer and kiss a girl.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. I guess anyone who has seen the Netflix series House of Cards, if you're a JJ fan, you probably would have noticed in the season finale right out of the gate, one of JJ's tunes playing, is it The Sun Is Shining Down? Mm-hmm. Is that the tune? Which was amazing to go through the series and then hear something that's connected to my life in other ways. How important, business-wise, how does that affect you when you get a placement like that in a show that's viewed to that extent?
Well,
do you notice a significant thing at shows, or is it just a thing that happens?
It's for me, I think I notice it. Everything helps.
Yeah.
For me, most importantly was the guy who does that show, House of Cards. That was one of the best usages I've seen of any of the tunes that I've done, that when people have used it, and thankfully everybody that's used stuff so far has been really, really great. And I wasn't familiar with the show only because I didn't have internet at the house, because it was, I live way out in the middle of nowhere. Now I've got cable internet, and so we dance around the house, how we can watch anything and listen to anything like the rest of the world now. But at the time, I couldn't watch Netflix because it just, the internet was based on usage. Right. So I didn't get to see any of that kind of stuff. But then I finally saw that when it came out, and I was like floored by it. And it's all about connecting all those things, and I really honestly try not to think about any of it. Other than the fact I'm like, man, I like to sing that song again. It had been a while. This river is a similar, 1-4-5 minor six, for all the music nerds. a combination. There's something with those chords that I first heard it in the soundtrack of Thin Red Line, one of my favorite movies of all time, and it just sticks with me, and it just brings this thing out of me, and it winds up in songs. So that's why you won't never hear This River and Sun Is Shining Down in the same set, but I had played This River for years, or for a while. I hadn't played Sun Is Shining Down in a long time. And that's where the change I noticed. I flipped back to that one for a little while just to play it. But those are two songs that completely wrote themselves. Same with King Hummingbird.
Just got to pick up the pen.
Yeah. They just write themselves.
Like lightning, that's a good thing that happens. Does the business end of music distract you from the artist's end? Mm-hmm. You're probably at a point now where you have a pretty big team, I would assume, behind you helping with mm-hmm. the business end. So are you able to let them do that and just focus on playing and not let that distract you?
Yeah, I got great people that I work with and work with me and band, the guys on making the show happen every night off the stage, and then everybody else, and I don't, when I think about it, they have nothing to do with each other in terms of, I don't want the tail to try to wag the dog, so to speak,
right.
And meaning that, you're going to try to write tunes now that fit, you become a caricature of yourself. Fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, I've never had like a giant hit thing where suddenly you're being asked to reproduce what you've already done. And I've never had that. So, and I know people that have, and I feel their pain or the pressure of you're trying to fix everything for everybody mm-hmm. by doing it again. You're going to pan for gold and you're going to strike it again, instead of just, hey, man, just do what you do, and let the chips fall where they may. Everybody's going to be fine, So I've always kept them separate, but fortunately or unfortunately, mm-hmm. like I said, however you want to look at it, but I look at it fortunately. Fortunately for me, I've never been confronted with that kind of situation. I've never had a label tell me what to do, how to write, what or nothing. It's I've been very fortunate. I've heard horror stories from friends that have been on big labels and different things, and I've had friends on big labels and everything was cool too. So, mm-hmm. but I've heard the stories of every little thing you do is monitored and know you got to do this and know you got to do that and could you add these kind of lyrics instead? And I've never had any of that kind of stuff. It's just like, hey, when you're done, send us the master. We put it out and
yeah, that's
we'll see you out there on the road, you know, that kind of a thing.
So. Leave you to do your thing.
Yeah.
That's a good position to be in. Back to Old Glory for a second. We were talking earlier about War Horse and this river and their sonic kind of similarities in mm-hmm. relationship. And the first time I listened to Old Glory, I just felt like it was a little bit different. I mean, it's still the same band. It's obviously same soulful vocals, and that's JJ and Mofro. But sonically, it struck me... just sounded a little different to me than those previous two albums. Was that a conscious thing? Is that something that I'm imagining, or do you feel like that album has grown in a separate way?
I think the difference for me is that people were more familiar, the band was more familiar. I just spring tunes on the band at the last minute, you know, and I felt like the band was way more familiar with the material by the time we got there, but they were very similar, and I remember you saying it felt like that the two albums between Georgia War Horse and This River could mm-hmm. have been a double album, and in some ways you could almost throw in Old Glory, like the song like I can't remember my own songs now. One of the tracks it's been around a long time actually, Turn Loose. Mm-hmm. It I've tried to record it on every album, and it just didn't work. But it worked on This River, mm-hmm. and I didn't have. When I got down to it, I'm like, I'm not satisfied with the lyrics, so I just waited, and then I re-sang that tune, and we just used what we did on This River mm-hmm. is on this album, Old Glory. Yeah, the Turn Loose version from This River is on this album, except I sang it.
Yeah.
So you know. Here again, I haven't tried to change anything. I haven't tried to make it different. I haven't tried to make it the same. It's just,
what happens?
Get songs together. I go into the studio, and it's funny. Some people like, sounds too much like the old album. And other people, it sounds nothing like the old album. You know, and everybody, it's like arguing about colors. What's your favorite color? No, blue's better than red. You know, it's like so I look at it like, for me, I just keep. I get out in the woods and I chase the rabbit, man. And if I catch him, I catch him. If I don't, I have fun trying to. So.
Yeah, chase him again tomorrow.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably the luxury and the curse of having a rabid, diehard fan base. That they take ownership of that band. And, you know, I mean, everyone's probably said, yeah, I love that band, but man, their first album, way back when, that's when I liked them best. Or I like their new stuff. And they're very, do you find your fans are very open to let you do your thing?
Oh, I think so. But you know what anybody in doing that would be guilty of, I've been guilty of, you know.
Yeah.
I was explaining it to a friend of mine that I went to a Buddy Guy concert and he on the Sweet Tea album. I had never been to see Buddy Guy before that. Was floored, blown away, bragged about it for 12 months. He came back to Jacksonville. I had all my friends ready to go down there, and then I came out there and he only played one or two songs off Sweet Tea. And I felt like I let down. And I look over there to start making excuses why, well, it was better last time. And I can see on their faces, like, they feel like it's the best concert I've ever been to in my life.
Yeah, it's Buddy Guy.
And I'm like, well, you know, he didn't play. He's like, I don't know Sweet Tea. I don't care, dude. This is the great. I'm like, you know what it is? It's like, I came in here expecting this.
Totally.
And it's my expectation that's ruining it instead of allowing me to actually enjoy it. So I cannot fault anybody for saying, you know, associating the first time they heard something and they like that more. Mm-hmm. Because I can do the same thing, and I still do the same thing. I might still appreciate Sweet Tea more than one of his newer albums. But it doesn't mean I don't appreciate the newer album too.
So
I love it, and it that's more or less because it's that indelible print that you get printed with the first time you see it.
Right.
you know, I got no beef with that, because if I did, I'd have to have a major beef with myself. I'd do it all the time.
So. Yeah, fair enough. I think that's probably a pretty human thing. We're nearing the end of our hour. Do you think we can pull another tune out of you?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
All right, man.
So many things you seen, so many stories long forgotten, so many deeds between, shouting out across the bottom. Beneath the ghostly twilight, a bosom filled with shining stars, the secrets sing down through the ages, as bright as lightning bugs and jars. All beneath the canopy of ageless souls, secrets keep forever in a beauty. This island is my home. Rolling hills by hands were built by natives who were never found. The only hints left of their passing are ancient shells that ghost the ground. They tell a story of all the slaves who graced the shores, of cotton fields so long plowed under, a jungle now upon a store. Island is my home. Oh, 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 yeah. I'm going home. I'm going home.
Thank y'all.
Mr. J.J. Gray, everybody. All right. We're at the end of our hour, and I just want to say thank you so much for coming up and spending time in Fredericton in general. This is the fourth time you've been back to the festival, and we appreciate you coming.
Thanks for having me. Best interview I've ever done in my life. So thank you. Thank you.
I just want to say a quick thanks to The Wolf and Carter, and specifically Conrad, for letting me do this. I really appreciate it. And Carter's going to say a few words to wrap it up here. So thanks, everybody, for coming up this afternoon, and all you in Radio Land for listening.
Yeah, man.
And first of all, thanks so much to A to Z Rentals, Kia Fredericton, and Dolan's Pub for helping us out with this studio series. Thanks so much to awesome local businesses. And I want to thank so much to J.J. Gray for sitting down with us at the Harvest Studio Series for a great chat and giving us a little closer look at what goes into his craft. As one of the Harvest Jazz and Blues Festival's favorite performers, it's an honor to have him come by and sing for us, especially between shows. J.J. played last night, and he plays again tonight. It's safe to say that Fredericton loves J.J. Gray.
All right, we're